Ecclesiastes. The word, well, in the first verse it says the words of the preacher. The word, you know, it doesn't matter, but in Hebrew it's koheleth. And it says the words of the koheleth, or the, it's the words of what preach, it's like, how can I say this? The book defines the function. The book of Ecclesiastes defines the function of a preacher. So it defines the function of a priest. It defines...
So he's not saying the words of any old preacher.
No,
he's saying the words of
a preacher, or the preacher of all time. The only preacher. So that is the first thing that you have to see. All prophecy, remember the two witnesses that are resurrected within the temple in the book of Revelation. It's wisdom. The two witnesses are Elijah and Enoch. And they represent wisdom and prophecy. This book, wisdom and prophecy, how can I say that? Everybody, anybody can prophesy. You know, you just sort of blah.
Yeah, we've seen
examples. Blah. Discernment. Brute beasts can prophesy. Okay? But prophesying with wisdom is preaching. And prophesying with wisdom is the book of Ecclesiastes. It's the anchor of all bringing forth fruit necessary for repentance, which is our only role is on the face of the earth. Okay? Now, both in the book of Ecclesiastes is the Greek, Ecclesiastes is the Greek word for a preacher. Just like koheleth is a Hebrew word for that function. So how can I say this? It's read, each of the things in the scriptures has a particular time when it's read. This is read on the intervening Sabbath during the Feast of Tabernacles. Or if the Sabbaths happen to fit, you know, so it's Sabbath to Sabbath, then it's read on the eighth day. So in truth, it's an eighth day reading. It's like looking back. You can't say this stuff unless you've experienced this stuff. Otherwise, you'll just sound like... Yeah, you'll sound like... you'll sound like sour grapes or... you know, that you're just bitter, or, you know, like you're against money because you've never had any money, or you're against sex because you can't get any, or, you know, that kind of thing.
I went out back Saturday morning after the sun came up and looked at, on the ground around basically the altar where all the fruit had been smashed. And in the light of day, the fire gone, but in the light of day, looking at that pile of trash,
okay. In all times, including back in the ancients of the Hebrews, and many, many times during the course of the Christian church, the leadership has wanted to decanonize this book. There's only one other book in the Bible that's more controversial in terms of whether or not it should be included, and that's the book of Daniel.
But Song of Solomon?
Huh?
What about Song of Solomon?
Well, that's up there, but this one's worse.
What's a Daniel?
What is? Well, the Daniel, it's not that it shouldn't be included, it was that it should be among the writings instead of among the prophets, and that's another technical discussion. Yeah, like the stuff that we read in at Tammuz and Ab.
Oh, okay.
were originally in the book of Daniel. Okay, so I want to... The ancient rabbi said that the reason that this was written by Solomon at a time when the Holy Spirit had left him.
This one?
Yeah. I mean, that's the ones that the ones said that are the ones that wanted to kick it out.
Oh,
okay. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, vanity in Hebrew and Greek, when we see vain or vanity, it doesn't mean what it means in English today. To be vain or of in vanity now means that you like to look at yourself or to make yourself the subject of your sentence, or you're vain about the way you comb your hair or look or appearance or whatever. This word for vanity here and the word for vanity in the Greek means empty, fruitless, without purpose. You got the difference? Otherwise you'll miss the whole point of this book. What profit hath a man of all his labors, of all his labor which he taketh or undertakes or performs under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteneth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, it turneth about unto the north, it whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be done. And that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of those things that are to come away, or to come, any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. When I first became a believer, I got locked into that, those stupid discussions about, because if you take, if a man named Bishop Ushery did it many, many years ago, and he computed the age of the earth based on the ages of phenomena that are here. You know, and it's about 7,000 years old. And I had participated in carbon dating things that were, you know, several hundred thousand years old, or maybe millions. And the whole idea of evolution versus creation, had I not been satisfied, I would have thrown away the faith that I just thought I'd found. Until this scripture, there is no remembrance of former things. Well, that caught my eye. I mean, and I started pulling strings. If there is, because when you look up in this word, it's not just remembrance, it means both remembrance and evidence. Like there's no evidence of this fact that, I mean, because there's obvious, you know, a transistor is something, a new thing. A computer is a new thing. A light bulb is a new thing. And it says that there is no new thing. It has already been done of old time. But then it says there's no remembrance of that old time. And so then I started, as most of you have heard me teach on, this whole thing of a pre-Adamic age, that could have existed millions and millions of years, and the scriptural evidence for is abundant. And so all of a sudden, there is an alternative to the creationist theory versus the evolutionist theories. There's something else. Both of them are wrong. And so the idea then that there was an existence that included at least everything that we are now aware of just blew me away. That there could be a whole world and worlds within worlds and inventions and everything that nothing that we have now is new. Blew me away. and made all of the scientific evidence for fossils, etc., just clear as a bell. That there was no problem between creation versus, but there is simply no remembrance, no evidence of these former things. Now, you know, you and with scientific training, that has to have struck your mind at some point. Well, there's a whole abundance that shows that there was a whole other creation before Adam. It's a whole system. It was the age of Lucifer. And the beings that existed then ate both of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and of the tree of life and were spiritualized, and everything was destroyed. Okay. We're in Ecclesiastes. Chapter 1, verse 12. Well, anyway, let me talk about this a minute. There's some neat stuff in that first part of it. If you look at those and number them, there are seven vanities within that vanity of vanities. And the ancient rabbis say those seven vanities correspond to the seven worlds which a man in his experience or in his lifetime beholds. From birth to 1 or 2 years, he's like a king seated in a canopied litter, fondled and kissed and served by all. From 2 to 3, he is like a pig sticking his hands in the gutters and insatiable. At 10, in joy and play, he skips like a kid. At 20, he's like a neighing horse ruled by his passions, braying in the wind. At 30, having married, he's like an ass.
A big ass.
Big one, too.
Sending a pigeon in the ear.
Yeah, speaking of which, hey, Daryl.
He's like an ass. I won't elaborate on that one.
What does it say when you get 50?
Let's just shut up. Then at somewhere after that, with children, he grows brazen like a dog to supply food, their food and wants of his children and family. And when he becomes old, he's bent like an ape.
Oh.
But the point of it is, those are the seven worlds that each person inhabits during the course of his life. He starts out like a king, then he's a pig, then he's a kid or skips like a lamb, then he's like a neighing horse, then he's like an ass, then he's like a dog, and then he's like an ape. Now, what has been said holds true for the ignorant, but for those versed in Torah, he's always like David. Now, King David was old. Although he was old, he was still a king, as in the first state. That's pretty. So, now, also it does some pretty neat stuff for other. The seven vanities also correspond to the 7 days of creation. Now remember, we're talking about the 7 days of the feast correspond to the 7 days of time. Now the 7 vanities correspond to the 7 days of creation. And the first day, it says, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, in Genesis 1:1. But it also said, the heaven shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, as Isaiah 51:6. Then in the second day, it says, let there be a firmament. But in Isaiah 34, it says, the heavens or the firmaments shall be rolled together like a scroll. And the third day, it says, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together. And then, but in Isaiah also it says, the Lord shall utterly destroy the sea. And the fourth day, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven. But again in Isaiah it says, the moon shall be confounded and the sun shall be ashamed. And the fifth day, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures. But in Zephaniah it says, I will consume the fowls of the heaven and the fishes of the sea. And the sixth day it says, let us make man in our own image. But I will cut off man from the face of the earth, in Zephaniah. And the seventh day, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. But everyone that profaneth the Sabbath shall surely be put to death. And so the point of it is that even the creation of the earth itself, if you have eyes to see, reveal the vanity. That the words that God used when he said, I have the earth, it says in Genesis 1 that the earth was without form and void. But in Isaiah it says he creates nothing without form and void. In fact, that's one of the scriptures that secularists use to prove the contradictions in the Bible, as are all are these. If you ever make the parable the end, i.e. literalize the parable, even that of the earth itself and the creation itself, then you'll miss the point of vanity. You understand? That's the lesson of this book, is that there is nothing in this book that you can literalize. It's all a parable. And to literalize the way they prove this by this reading, or by this example of the 7 days, is even creation itself was made to show forth the vanity of the creation. Now that's wild. Because your mind will always run to a point where you think there should be an anchor, a stability, by something that you can see. We talk about it as solid as Mother Earth. Well, I studied earthquakes for 11 years. The earth isn't solid. You know, that's in the greatest killer in earthquakes is suicide. Yeah. The suicide rate immediately during and immediately after an earthquake goes up by 500%. And the reason is that you're so structured to think that this solid earth is something subconsciously stable to you. That when everything that's stable to you is shaken, you have no anchor, so you shoot yourself. Now, if you've never been in an earthquake, it's an awesome experience. I mean, do you understand stop a minute and think about this one little. The thing that hath been is that which shall be done. That which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new?
I love that.
It hath been already of old time, which was before us. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, if you could let that penetrate into this brain cells, it would be impossible for you to ever experience self-seeking again. Because your drive for self-seeking is to do a new thing. Now, and don't go here, just stay where you are. Paul is at Athens. Remember when we talked about his Mars Hill speech? And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, may we know what this new doctrine whereof thou speakest is. For thou bringest certain strange things to our ears. We would know, therefore, what these things mean. For all the Athenians and strangers which were there spent their time in nothing else but to either to tell or to hear some new thing. Spend a year on that. I'll never get done. Do you understand a little bit?
Yeah. I've been enamored by one generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, and the sun is born every morning, and the sun dies every night, and it goes back to where it was born from, and there's no new thing, and there's no remembrance. One generation does not learn from the one that came before. It does not progress. My father got old and died. I'm going to get old and die, and I don't learn from that. I believe I'm going to live for, I'm going to do a new thing. I'm going to live forever.
You know what's the biggest frustration for me? Is not to be able to communicate what I feel. I mean, it's like, and to know that I'm not communicating it. It's like, I want to do a new thing. I want to be able to communicate.
What about going to the moon?
What about
it? Seems like it was a new thing.
Well, it does. Well, what about light, electric lights? We don't have to go to the moon. That's what I'm saying.
They even found battery cells in like an old Egyptian ruins of batteries for electricity.
I mean, I'm talking cool. about stuff.
I know, but even then, you can't say electricity's a new thing. But they even have proof of that one.
She's contradicting me.
No, she's not. I'm saying that there is no new thing whatsoever. Whether it's going to the moon or not going to the moon, whether it's the wildest thing that you can think of, it's already happened in the previous age, before Adam. Okay, well, I'll just go on. Okay.
Well, maybe I went to the moon, Pete.
I don't think they went to the moon. I know they went to the moon.
Yeah, but I was just thinking about how funny it'd be, you know, we send a spacecraft to the moon, and we land there, and what do we find? Fossils.
Old dishes.
I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. Verse 13. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. Now, the sore travail is the propensity or the need to seek out concerning wisdom all things that are under the sun. He has done that for a particular and simple reason. It says exercise therewith. That's not what it says. It says God did that so that you would be humbled therewith. The word exercised is better translated as humbled. That means brought low. Now the one thing that you will find out, it's only the dumb people that think they know something. The people that you are around that truly have wisdom know they don't know anything. I mean, whether there's a great book, it's called The Ideas and Opinions by Albert Einstein, who was, you know, arguably the most brilliant man that's ever, that, at least in our generation. When you read that book, all he's confessing is he knows nothing. It's not just E equals MC squared and his theories of relativity. It's his frustrations with, you know, there's this great segment in there. He's sitting in a room in Paris and he's overlooking a street for Bastille Day. And there's all these bands marching in rows and people marching. And he gets so mad because anybody would be dumb enough to get in little rows and march. That he can't contain himself. And then he said, I can't remember what he says, but he hung himself because, and he, but then he said, and yet I do da-di-da-di-da, which is dumber. But I mean, that's the kind of, you know, think about the people you know. The ones that really know something are the ones that know they don't know anything. The ones that are the ones that you can't stand are the ones that are, they think they know something. All right. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. What does vexation of spirit mean?
Being all frustrated.
It means that which takes you away from the rest, being content with whatsoever state you're in. What are you, vexing?
Yes, that's vexation of spirit.
We don't just have preaching, we have sound effects.
That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my own heart, saying, lo! I can't imagine talking to myself and saying, lo.
No.
Yo.
Yo,
maybe.
Yo.
Now I can imagine Ed talking to himself and saying, low.
I've come to great estate. How low can I go? Louis
used to speak to himself in King James Shakespeare.
Larry praised King James.
First time Louis ever
been before me into.
Lo, I am come to great estate and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have gone before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit, for in much wisdom is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow.
That's a killer.
Well, like 17 is also like being filled up with everything.
I was just thinking, how many wives did this guy have?
We're going to get to that in a minute.
Several. Four favorites and several hundred.
Four favorites.
I said in my own heart, go to. That's another thing I would never say now.
Go to now.
Go to now. I said in my heart, go to now, I will test thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. Behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine. Yet acquainting, you can see why the rabbis didn't want to have this one in the book. I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom. And to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under heaven, under the heaven, all the days of their life. I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, I had planted trees in them all of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water there with the wood, and bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great cattle and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasures of kings and of provinces. I gat me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath already been done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. I said in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happened even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. All over Arizona, there's these bumper stickers that talk about, because all in Arizona is a bunch of old farts. And the bumper sticker simply says, I'm spending my kid's inheritance, or some such thing. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise unto the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and great evil. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat? Or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Well, what can we talk about here? Why don't we then, why doesn't Rick, you know, continue to spend all his bucks on cocaine? Why doesn't Harry go get married again? Or, you know, why doesn't Ed go spend all his money in Boys Town? Or, you know, what is it? Why aren't you doing exactly, you know, why then, why don't you go rob banks? Why don't you we have enough talent in this body of people to put together a pretty sophisticated group of thieves. And we could, you know, we could really, I mean, why do we do anything? You know, why does Ed go to work at that stupid newspaper? Half the time doing something he doesn't. What?
The next one.
Why does Pete, you know, go to that job at the printing company? Why do you think you want to go to school? You know, why does September go to work at the paper company? What are we doing? Why is this? Why, all this is bullshit. What are we doing? Why do you think your life's going to be wonderful and happy if you go to college? I mean, it's all bullshit.
This is exactly where I am.
Exactly where
I have been for like 2 weeks.
I just, it's funny because I just went up to Lubbock and I don't know, surrounded by the girl population up there is incredible. And I'm telling you, we went to some parties and stuff, and I was just thinking to myself, man, that would be great if I could just go to Lubbock and go to school.
Oh, man. Vanity, man, I live right here.
I mean, if you want to go where the women are, you know, that's silly. Go to Lubbock. No, I mean, go to Paris or go to Montenegro or go to, you know, go to Mallorca. Go where the real ones.
Where they're not wearing anything.
Well, I mean, where there's not only women, there's rich women. I mean, why are we doing this shit?
I don't know. I
no, it's not rhetorical. This is.
No, I'm serious. I've been like, I go to work, I'm sitting there, and I think all of this, and then I think I'd quit if I thought it would make me happy, but I don't think it would, so I don't. And that's as far as I get with it.
The point was nothing else to do.
I've been thinking about that too. You know, you get calls from these girls on the radio that you've known. You know, I mean, it's weird. It's absolutely bizarre. You know, you get these calls. And one of them, the very first one that called was this girl. I was telling Barbara, it's, you know, I just had a crush on her all during high school. You know, and I saw her at the class reunion, and I still liked her. And she called, and her boyfriend just killed himself. I mean, accidentally. He slipped in the bathtub and bashed his head and drowned. It just seemed totally bizarre, you know, like a waste.
Repetition. It's just kind of, it's not really exciting, but you're just kind of doing it because
you know, something's going to come up or
that. Remember I told you that the only reason that you had been coming around and coming to Bible study, this is one of the pre, is because you hoped something would happen?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
This is
it's
it.
Happened. I mean, face it. Most of the time, you spend your lives pissed off at what you're doing. You hate your jobs. There's no joy except in very periodic moments. And you're just plodding along like a beast, hoping that grass is greener around the corner. Mm-hmm. Hoping that, you know, I can... Pete and Levi and Ed and Rick too, and Harry. Ha!
She's the one.
She's the one. Barbara's about giving up on men, so she's, maybe there's something somewhere else. Jessica's sort of just getting ready to get disappointed.
She's right. Now that he's going to be coming here. Boy,
yeah, she's right on the brink of disappointment.
My first response is, tell us about this place in Mallorca.
Are you a morning drive guy?
That's right. One last time. Just to make sure there's nothing.
Now I know what I'm going to do with my man.
I know. I just want to make sure there's nothing absolutely positive.
September spends 90% of her life pissed off at Daryl.
That's a great legend.
I love it. That's
my the best part is, I don't know if it's ever going to
change. I mean, what is there under the sun? Where is this what the hell are you doing here? You ever think about it, especially like for Harry and Barbara and Pete, the rest of you are only half crazy. They're full-time crazy. They spend 5 nights a week, and then Harry listens to everything twice. I mean, that's really obscene and stupid.
Full-time crazy.
He doesn't have to go anywhere to Boston. He's just like
to roll out of bed.
You rescued out of bed.
What? I mean, do you realize there's 5 billion people in the world? There's billions and billions and billions. And here you are in Dallas, Texas, coming to this stupid Bible study that's all it's done is fuck up your lives. Made your parents all mad at you. Or at least suspect.
Get a ration of major shit every 6 weeks.
What?
Get a ration of major shit every 6 weeks.
What's that mean?
If I figured it out, I get a ration of shit. I get yelled at every 6 weeks. It works out to a 6 week cycle.
I'll find a
clinch
on the
bridge
over the cliff. I'll tell
another
rabbi
to
look with me.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, God.
Where's Ollie living now, Barbara? Oh, he just moved in with me.
Yeah. Well, stuff like that, I guess that brings up the question, why do you do it?
You know why I do it?
You love nights like these.
Hmm?
Do you love nights like these?
No. I do it for one reason only. There's nothing else in the world that I would rather do. Now, the reason that is true in me is because I tried about everything else. And so when I became a believer, I said, God, either I will know with a certainty that this is true, that I'm not being deceived, or I will die. I won't have anything to eat. Because I refused to lift a finger to support me. Essentially, since for 17 years now. Now, for me, that was the test as to whether or not it was real. I knew I could go out and make money and do stuff and but there wasn't, it wouldn't have been real. Now, I don't know what that test is in you. Only you know. For some of you, it may be that very fact. I mean, my statement literally was, God, I will die of starvation unless you feed me. I mean, it wasn't, I'll die of starvation unless you feed me, and now I'm going to go on the radio and television and tell people to send me money because I'm living by faith. That wasn't it. It was different. It was silent. It was private. It was internalized. Now, what is it in you? Where is that dividing line that causes you to see you're living by resurrection, that you're singing a new song? Whatever it is, no matter what it costs you, find it. I mean, I've never been more serious in my life. I cannot. Cause all I can do is show you that life on this side of the line is vanity. What is it that'll show you life on the other side of the line? What is it so that never again will there be a doubt or a shadow? I mean, because unless that takes place, all that will ever happen is you will just repeat my words. You might change a verb or something, but essentially, and all you'll be able to do is, if you'll just feed people milk. If you feed people milk after you've had the milk, it's called vomit. What is it that will cause you to be in a position in which there is no doubt? That's where we are. Now, you can choose to stay in twilight. If you choose today to stay in twilight, I promise you, you'll choose tomorrow to stay in twilight. And you'll be in twilight at the end of time. There'll be neither light nor darkness. You'll neither be hot nor cold. But that's the lesson of the Feast of Tabernacles. There must be a crossover. And it will come along a line that in the past has been your strength. You understand? My strength for me was, money was always easy. I always had money. And so to totally lean not in my own arm of understanding in any arena, in that field, was the test.
Totally abandoning that strength.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I hope you understand what I'm talking about. Now, for Daryl's greatest, you know, some of you are easy. Daryl's easy. Because it's easy to identify. Daryl's greatest strength is intellect. Now, what does it mean? How do you totally deny intellect? That's easy. Do we pick on Harry?
Has it been 6 weeks? Okay, good.
Finally.
What's Harry's greatest strength? Why is order important to Harry?
Tell him what to do.
You have to have order so that you cannot see vanity. You understand?
Sure.
It's impossible to see the vanity of something that is well ordered. It's impossible to see the vanity of something that has style. It's impossible to see remember, the theme of all this is perception, not perception, experienced perception of the vanity of life. Because everything that's a strength in you has been an enemy of faith. If for you now the order and style, I don't know all the words to use. Oh, neat, all the little stupid words like neat, well-ordered, stylish. If they are your life, then you can never see the vanity of life. I mean, that's why kids so totally disrupt you, both spiritual and physical. You know, and that's why, I mean, that's why, you know, in the natural, the well-ordered societies have to believe in some kind of final solution. You know, your final solution in the spirit is to kill everybody that doesn't meet your standards. You know, you just kill Levi tonight. And so you're a Nazi. Because they disrupt your concept of order, and as long as your concept of order is disrupted, you'll fight it till hell freezes over. You'll admit every revelation, you will say all kinds of the right words, within the confines of that order, so that you can try to put the glory of God on the flesh. And you'll murder anybody that interrupts it. But you murder with impunity. It doesn't bother you that you murder. So therefore, the preacher, the vanity of vanities, are only intellectual words that you can apply to others. Then comes a spiritual child or a natural child whose life is chaos, and your response to that chaos, but there isn't even a sense of remorse. And you like it that I am, you know, I tend to be like things neat, because that gives you an alliance for your mass murder. It's been 6 weeks yet? So what's, if your strength is in order, I don't know, I mean, I'm not saying you go out and mess up your room or something.
Spend a week at an ICU.
No.
Am I communicating?
Yeah, you are communicating, and this is this. Yeah, the immediate. I must just show up.
Yeah, well, that's bullshit. Can't get by with that anymore. You must just show up tomorrow. Can't be the basis of your spirituality.
That's what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is the temptation in me is to try and anticipate every single detail and possible thing that can go wrong tomorrow, and be there.
Yeah, but now, yeah, okay. But you've said before that the reason you must just show up kind of that is because you've said 100 times that, well, as long as, I mean, just showing up is going to cause.
No, that's not.
Okay.
That's not what.
Okay.
What I mean is this.
I know what you mean.
That's chaos.
You know, it's fascinating to me that there's little things like. The thing that really bothers you is leaves that are falling off of a tree. You call it a dirty tree.
Really?
Oh, no.
Time, no matter, I mean, I picked on Harry harder than the rest of you because that's his job. But your response to something that interrupts your world has to be murder. Because this Antichrist will kill, murder, maim, do everything other than perceive the vanity of your life that book is talking about. If you were forced into the situation where you knew that things were not going to get better tomorrow than they are today, in fact, they were going to get worse, your mind will kill you before it allows you to see that. You understand?
Yeah.
Yes.
Your, whatever arena you want to talk about, your mind believes it's going to be better tomorrow. I.e., that's what hope is. You hope. Someday I'll believe. Someday I'll have a wife. Someday there'll be a suitable woman. Someday I won't be sick. Someday I'll stop masturbating. Someday, shall I stop?
You're getting good. For a minute I thought you were going to say you're getting warm.
And so
there's perceived,
if I perceive that
improvement,
that will even be worse tomorrow than it is today,
you'll kill yourself.
I feel like he was talking to you. Stop!
I hadn't thought about it, but in when all the times that I used to want to kill myself or began considering the possibility of it, it was always in connection with perceived vanity. I mean, not like, oh, like I could find now in what I was seeing vanity, but at that time I was saying, it's bad, getting worse, and it'll never get better, so check out now. And you would.
So, the alternative is, God is long-suffering, not willing that any of us should perish, but that all should come to true repentance, which means the abandonment of your life. Now, that message is the message of Ecclesiastes, because there's no other response to the book of Ecclesiastes except either to suicide or abandonment. If you could hear the book of Ecclesiastes and personalize it to your life, you would have no other response, the natural man, other than suicide. Now, I mean, that's why it's so imperative that you stop hustling yourself.
Yeah.
Now, the only way I know to stop hustling, I don't know, I don't have any formulas. The only one thing I know is that there comes a time in which you must deny your strength. You must purpose weakness. Now, that's what, in purposed weakness, his strength is made manifest. You know, in 2 Corinthians, what?
In meekness.
No, well.
Is that purposed weakness?
Yeah, that's good.
It really fucks freaking up.
For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in purposed weakness. Now, that's a biggie. Because all of your strengths have done nothing but manipulate. Well, all of us use sorcery because it's that process, you know, that we all do internally when we try to, I mean, abandon yourself, deny yourself. Take no thought. Not even one little thought about yourself, positive or negative, ever. Is that possible to live in that state of existence? Especially when there's some idiot like Oli preaching at you and putting you in trips,
start. I daydream a lot. I have to stop. Maybe that's thinking of yourself. But I have to stop daydreaming.
Every time you see yourself doing it, every time you catch yourself doing it, you say, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Father, forgive me." I don't care if it's 100,000 times a day.
I didn't hear all what
you said. He said he daydreams a lot, projects himself into different situations. But again, no, I don't claim to have any supernatural powers to tell you what your strength is. You know that better than you do. I mean, better than I do. You know it better than you do, too.
Yeah.
You know, these strengths are the things that you do that cause you not to see and understand Ecclesiastes. And it's not a conscious thing, it's a state of being. I mean, that's why we need to exhort each other. I mean, every time you see the manifestation of it, then we need to exhort each other daily. Anyway, that we've started on Ecclesiastes, and we'll spend a couple more times on it. But it's important. The end result of Ecclesiastes is your ability to say intellectually and emotionally that vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And that we will attack any arena of your life that prevents you from seeing the vanity. Does everybody understand a little bit about, you know, I didn't pick, I was real easy on him, but.
Well, you do the rest.
Yeah, well, I was going to go ahead and ask you for the rest of it. I can take it, because I really need to know.
Ask
so
him later,
I want to
do it. Well. You do the rest of this, will you do it in order?
We'll talk, no, we'll talk more about all of us over the course, because I didn't pick him myself either.
Oh, yeah, hey.
Okay? But, so, for the next couple of times, we're going to, hopefully, look at Ecclesiastes. Amen?
Are you going to say
take a big guy.